Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 4. Ecclesiastes 1, 4. One generation passes away, and another generation comes. But the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, "See, this is new"? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Let's pray. Lord, the vanity of life without you is not something that optimistic humanists, like we naturally tend to be, I guess, will accept. There's a great deal of meaning without you, a great deal of joy without you, a great deal of happiness, a great deal of knowledge and wisdom and instruction and a good way without you. And without any religion or without any worship, without any prayer, without any of the trappings of belief systems, many would say it's all made by man. All religion is man-made, and all worship is worthless and futile and of no good but to waste time. And many do waste time with religion. And so, Lord, the world thinks this way. And Solomon instructs the world, and the world's so proud. Will we hear or will we ignore it? I pray, Lord, we would hear in Jesus' name. Amen. One toy I had growing up, I had to think of it today, what the name of it was. And I asked Cindy if she knew what this was. And I said the name of it, and I didn't know if it was the name at the time. I had not looked it up yet. And it turned out I had the name right. And I asked her if she remembered this or had this or used it. She didn't remember. I didn't bother asking Jessica. I know she's not have a clue about it. But we had it, and maybe you had it. It's called a wheelo. You remember that? It was a little rail with a wheel on it that had magnets on each end of the wheel, and it ran along those rails up and back up and over and back over and under and like that, and it went like in an S pattern, but in a very tight S. Yeah, yellow and red, I think. And the wheel was red, I believe, and there was yellow on it, and there was a little place that you could adjust the speed. I don't know. But I think it started to be around in the 50s. So, but it's a wheelo. And so a wheelo is just the whole of the wheelo is that it goes, you put it on, and you start gravity. I remember moving it up and down like that. It starts getting some centrifugal force. It starts moving along. You can start getting it going faster. And it'll keep going. And if you're really good, you can get it really whipping around there. And probably It would occupy the minds of today's kids probably about one or two times around the loop. And then they would be done with it. And they go back to looking for Pokemon. But it really was, for that day and time, an interesting toy. Because you had little movements you were making. It's like a yo-yo in some ways, which also would take about two seconds for the modern generation. But you could regulate the speed. There was a little plastic slide down where you held it. If you moved it up one way, it made it go faster. If you moved it down, it would make it go slower because of the way it spread the rails out. And you could get it going so fast that it would come off. Centrifugal force would, if you went too fast, when it went around the curve, when it was on the outside of the rail, it wouldn't be able to hold itself on. The magnet would not be strong enough. And it would go flying off and in the floor, and you'd be running to get it. It's one of those kind of relaxing things that you do, you know, if you sit there and do it and make it run around a while. And why that interests us, I don't know. It might have been more boys than girls that would use it, but I don't know that. But imagine if you're looking at that wheelo, and it was your job by looking at the wheelo to figure out what the meaning of life was. Just by looking at the wheelo. And remember, it just goes in circles, in an S-shaped route. A circuit, I guess, would be better. And whether it's fast or slow, or if you're skilled or unskilled, it works pretty much the same for every person. Some people can make it go faster. Some would have to go slower. Some would figure out a way to keep it on the rails at a faster speed. There was no way to race it. You couldn't count the revolutions it was taking. You just did it and got whatever from it you could. You never knew when it would spin off, land in the floor. If it did, it was likely your fault. You went too fast. You flew too close to the sun, Icarus, and your wings melted and you plunged to earth, or the wheel did. If today we recognized that the wheelo held the secret to the message of life, what is that message? And by the way, where is the wheelo? You know how we were with toys. When we had them, they were worth a couple of dollars, and that's it. I imagine a wheelo straight from the factory that you put up somewhere, still in the box, from 1956 or in the 60s, would be worth something. Somebody would put some value to that. But as far as the mechanism, the movement of the wheel, I lost mine a long time ago. If I had to find the meaning of life now, it may be somewhere but I doubt it, in the move out of the house. My dad sold the house. I bet if he came across a wheelo, he put it in a box and put 5 cents on the box. If you want to take the whole thing, because it's just not something that has a lot of value. It can't render any real information about life. It can't make a person fulfilled. Can't teach us anything authoritative and absolute. It's boring, really, in a very short time. If if that's what we had to play with today, you'd see people with the wheelo, but that wouldn't be enough. They'd be jumping off of planes with a wheelo or sliding down a hill with a wheelo. It wouldn't be enough to keep anybody's attention for a long time. And once it's lost, some kids would have cried about it, but it would have passed. But suppose this scenario, that the maker of the wheelo had a plan. Now think of this. We look at the wheelo and we say, Mom, I can't figure out the meaning of life looking at this thing. It just goes in a circle. Dad, I don't understand what I'm supposed to do with this information. How's this going to make me a better person? How's it going to make me feel better? Everybody can make the wheelo go around, and it's I'm not getting any kind of fulfillment out of it. But then the maker of the wheelo, and I don't know, I forget who it was. Suppose he had a plan. And his plan was basically a plan that is often employed by makers of many different things. His plan was not that you would be satisfied with the wheelo, but that you would seek something beyond the wheelo to one of their other products. If you like the wheelo, then we have something else that's like a souped-up wheelo. So they would be taking you from the simple, and he had a plan to make you get more things from the company that made the wheelo. And that's done in many things today. If you buy a computer, there are peripherals, there's software. You buy a car, there are accessories. Clothes, there are accessories. Your house always has to have these various little different things. So the thing itself is not the end of it. It's only a means, and people add to it. But in the case of the wheelo and whatever else the company made, you would never find anything approaching the meaning of life in these toys. But it doesn't mean there would not be a plan. Now think of then the world. Let's take the wheelo and let's set it aside. And the wheelo now that we're looking at is this world. Not just the creation, all that's involved, but the way of man, the way of life. The way of the animals, the way of the plants, the way of the oceans, the way of the winds, the weather, the rain, the snow, the clouds, the whole of it. That's our wheelo. And what does the Bible say about our world? It tells us, the Bible tells us, that the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day into day utter speech, night into night knowledge. There's no language, no place in the world where their voice is not heard. So the heavens declare the maker. Just like the wheelo, let's say in our example, the wheelo manufacturer now gets attention. What else have you made? What else have you got? Well, when we look at the world, the Bible says it is very natural for us to say, what else? Who's behind this? What are we supposed to go for from here? And a lot of people think, by nature, that seeing the world is all there is. We live in the world. We can make money in the world. We can have pleasures in the world. We can get a job and status in the world. We can make our mark in the world. It will sustain us. We get food from it. We breathe air in it. We dream in it. We look out into the heavens and wonder about the stars and the planets. And that's the whole thing. It's a closed system. We're put here. Everything is that life is about is here. And that is, of course, troublesome, because the world is passing away. and the lusts of it, the desire for the world, and the love of the world. It's passing away. We're told that in mere billions of years, this whole planet will be obliterated. If we don't do it before then, by burning fossil fuels. I've heard in recent days the world is as close to 10 years from destruction. And that was said 10 years ago by Al Gore. So by Al Gore's timetable, we're on borrowed time. He said we'd be done for back a while ago. And Rush Limbaugh started timing it when Gore said it and counted down 10 years on his website. Every time I'd go to his website, it'd be 7 years, 5 years, 2 years, 1 year. And finally, Armageddon came and passed, and we're on past it now. So you hear about it because we're abusing the planet, and the planet's all there is. Mother Earth's all there is. It's all we've got. It's the one we worship in today's world. We can't mistreat Mother Nature, Mother Nature, Mother Nature. And scientists look at the world in detail, in great detail with electron microscopes, and see the makings of the planet we live on. And we take telescopes, and even home telescopes, you can see so many wondrous things in the heavens. And people look at these things professionally as a career constantly, and they stop right there. Basically, what they're doing is they're studying the wheelo, and they want to know nothing more than that. Now look at Ecclesiastes 1:4. When you look at the world, remember the world is our equivalent to a wheelo in the illustration. What the world sees is different than what is. Solomon tells us that the world is vanity, verse 2. There's no profit under the sun. And I think literally he means under the sun. Just within this world, even if you gain a lot of profit, it's lost because it does not last, and it does not fulfill you. Verse 4. One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. We've got generations. When we were young, we had our generation. And we're in our generation now, just older now. New generations come since we've started ours. And the generation is young, and they go through things, they get older, and they die, and another one comes. And Solomon just says, one generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. Verse 5, the sun also rises, and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. It's a circle. The sun comes up, the sun goes down. When the sun goes down, it runs to the other side and comes up again, and just repeated over and over and over and over and over again. Verse 6, the wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. Now you see what is being done here is these are descriptions of this circular activity that is part of the world. Whether it be a generation, whether it be the sun, whether it be the wind, it goes here, turns, comes this way, turns, moves around, it's all a circle, moves about, doesn't get anywhere. Verse 7, all the rivers run to the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. So you can't fill up the ocean. Just looking at it, you know, that's kind of a thing. The ocean's pretty big. Rivers all flow into the ocean from all over the world. Rain falls into the ocean all over the world, yet the ocean stays the same. It's the same height, really. You got high tide, low tide. I know, you know, everybody was saying that when Obama came in to be president, all the seas were going to go down. The seas were stopped rising. Well, you know, all that just is, it's just the way of life. It's really a proud attitude to think that we have anything to do with that at all. All the rivers flowing in constantly, big rivers flowing into the ocean, well, that makes a bit of difference. It stays on a level way. And to the place where the rivers come, there they return again. So a river comes from somewhere. In Tryon, where I grew up, there are rivers that come out of the mountain. Mountains around, there's rivers that come out of there. I'm thinking, what? How's that work? How do you... the creek that ran below our house came from the mountain up there. And you could trace it up and it'd go up and come out of some hole. And what's up there? Elves? Somehow there's a spring coming up out of the ground in the rivers in the mountains, and they flow, and there's one that flows this way and there's one that flows on the other side over there, and there's on the mountain above Tryon, my dad and I went up a few years ago and riding up there, and there's a waterfall. If you go up to Hendersonville, salute up to 26, and you see over there, I think any time of the year, you'll see a waterfall up there. And that comes from the top of the mountain. And that's not someone who left a spigot running. I mean, there's some body of water that just comes there. And you got to figure, well, as soon as that waterfall falls on this mountain, it's going to dry up. And certainly sometimes streams dry up. But this just keeps on. Something's going on. And all of these things Solomon says aren't causing vanity. They are examples of it. And vanity, not in the sense that these things are vain or meaningless. They're beautiful. They supply water and all those things. It's not talking about that. It's saying that just like the wheelo, even when it functions according to the way it's supposed to function, you cannot get meaning and fulfillment from it. It does not bring the answer to life. It's circular. It flows out one end and fills up the other end. Verse 8, all things are full of labor. Men cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. All those sounds go in your head, don't fill up your head. All those sights go in your eyes, don't fill up your eyes. It's circular. It is circuitous. It goes round and around, up and down, in and out, over and under. It is just motion without meaning. If you look through a kaleidoscope, you know, those little things, we used to look up and look at the sun and turn those things and, oh, look at that. There was mirrors in there and little rock crystals and, oh, they made these nice geometric designs. You keep turning it, people look at them for a while, and boy, that's really nice. They put them down, and that was it. Pick it up later on, look at it again. Okay? My sister, I believe, had something called a spirograph. A spirograph. You put a pencil in a spirograph wheel, and it ran along years, and you circled it like that. It would make geometric designs. Anybody have that? It would make little geometric designs look like, you know, like an atom looks the way they depict it. But it went around in circles and made this geometric design. And it had different wheels and different tracks it went on and made different, you know, geometric designs. It was interesting, yeah. And if you did it right, once you finished with it, you could really hang it up like art. It was like a drawing, I guess, but artificially done with the aid of these geometric wheels. But it was impressive. But again, it didn't say anything. And it was done by circular motion going here and there. And at some point in the course of your spirographing, you would come back to the beginning and it would just retrace the line over and over again, just like it started. So he's using these things, not to say that these things are vain, but that they're illustrations of what it means to be vain, empty. Vain not in the sense of pride, but vain in the sense of empty. It does not convey meaning in itself. You cannot look at a creek, although you can enjoy the creek, you cannot get from it in itself the meaning of life. Verse 9, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. I was reading and still reading a Reagan biography, and I have a Ronald Reagan, his diary or his notes, his journal. And we forget, I do, pretty easily about how things were 10, 20, 30 years ago. And Reagan took, he won his election in 1980, so it's been 36 years. And so, you know, it's easy to forget what he went through, but I was reading there, and you know, everything that he was facing in that day with that Congress and with the people, it's the same thing today. It's just there's different people doing the same things. The Democrats were against the Republicans. The Democrats were trying to stop Reagan's tax cuts. Some of the Republicans were trying to stop them. And it was the same thing. And Israel was a certain way, and Egypt was a certain way. And we've got more terrorism today as Islam has broken out more. But again, that's the same as the Mongol hordes and all the things in history. This nothing new. What are we going to say that this is over? We've come to the end of this and it'll never happen again. When you bump your head last somewhere, did you say, oh, boy, I'm glad that'll never happen again? Well, you know good and well it will. If baby's learning to walk and it tumbles down and falls and hits its little chin on the floor, and they say, well, thank the Lord, you'll never have to do that again. A baby's going to hit the floor a lot of times before he's done. That which is what will be. What is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun in principle. Obviously, we have computers and cars and things like that we have, and they had other things. But in principle, you got transportation. Whether it's a horse, whether it's a bicycle, whether it's roller skates, whether it's a car, a plane, a bus, it's transportation. It's the same thing. You're getting from one place to the other. Now, what would be new, I guess, in some way, you know, if you had Dorothy's ruby red slippers and tapped your heels together a few times and went to the Wizard of Oz. But that would still be transportation. Verse 10, is there anything of which it may be said? See, this is new. It has already been in ancient times before us, in principle. There's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come, but by those who will come after. There's nothing distinctive and special just in the world itself. New things that crop up is not a contradiction of this. It's just part of a certain way things are always. And Solomon, verse 12 and verse 1, he says the same thing. These are the words of the preacher. It's a double introduction. He introduces it in verse 1, the words of the preacher. Verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. That's what we're talking about, the things of the world. This grievous task God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. In other words, it's a circuitous, circular, meaningless repetition of things. That all, once you trace it to the end, you find that they go right back to the beginning. And it starts all over again. And that is not reaching a conclusion. Coming to the end would be finding the meaning of it all. It never comes to the end. It just circles back. Verse 15, what is crooked cannot be made straight. What is lacking cannot be numbered. I commune with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart is understanding great wisdom and knowledge, has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived this also is grasping for the wind. If he finds out all about wisdom and madness and folly, he'll still be grasping for the wind in this world. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So just take the good things. You get wiser and you get more knowledge, and it brings you much grief and increases your sorrow. Our world has, our government has enabled us to feel that in a sense that the more money you make, the more they take from you. So if you make more money, they'll take more from you. They reward success by afflicting you harder. If you don't have, they take the share of that too. But the way it's set up is if you succeed, and it shouldn't be this way, but if you succeed, you get punished more. So who would want to succeed? It's like condemning hard work. Let's go on, verse 1, chapter 2. I said, my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, but surely this also was vanity. So pleasure is considered to be a goal, an end. Once you gain pleasure, you've arrived. But look what he said. It's vanity. When you get to the end of pleasure, you don't have the end of it. I said, of laughter it is madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? It doesn't accomplish anything. It's fun. It's a momentary thing. But it doesn't progress toward understanding of the world. I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. He said, I tried this wine thing. There are people doing that. They bury their sorrows in a bottle. What happens when they sober up? Lo and behold, amazingly, all their problems are still there that got them in the bottle in the first place. It's all vain. Verse 4, I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. So he went on a building program. Gardens and orchards, verse 5, planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. Made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. He got a bunch of possessions, made a bunch of things, built a lot of things. Also gathered for myself silver and gold, the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great, excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. You hear people saying, you know, if I just had more things, I'd be great. I mean, I'd have everything. I was going to get another translation of that there too. He said, you know, if people say, you know, if I get a couple more dollars, get a house, get a family, I got it. Verse 8 in the ESV says, I also gather for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of men. Well, he's got buildings, he's got houses, he's got women, he's got parties, he's got song, he's got all that, everything. There are people today who cannot walk in public, drive a car, work without having their earplugs in, listening to music. And nothing against music, but I wouldn't want to be listening to what's plugged into their ears in many cases. But I'm, you know, fine with music, but you know, sometimes you got to take the earplugs off and talk to people. You see it at a restaurant. People are at a restaurant at the table, what's everybody doing? Got their phone out. And I guess this person is sitting next to this person is texting that person to see what they think about something. It's vanity in the sense that all of these things that people do in order to gain a certain purpose and meaning is gone. It doesn't work. Let me skip down quick to verse 24. There's nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. Now that's doing what he's talking about doing above in the general sense. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment, says more than I, without God, is better, I think. For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight, but to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. So he concludes this section when he says, you know, the way you can have meaning is not in the world. The world is vain, but God is not. And if you have, it's like in the Garden of Eden. All the treasures there were nothing once they lost a relationship with God. But with a relationship with God, it was paradise. Without God, it all was blocked and taken away. So it's vanity. This is from Solomon, who did it all. He drank and partied, and I mean in the sense that we see. Had plenty of women. Tested all these things against wisdom and found that it was all vanity. Grasping for the wind. And grasping for the wind is like trying to catch the wind in your fist. You cannot do it. It evades us, which is why we need a revelation from God to tell us why we're here and what this is all about. But the world is supposed to make us say that and seek the God who is behind the creation. Because Romans 1 says we're without excuse because God has clearly made known his majesty by the things which he has made. So when we really see his creation, we seek the Lord. When we don't, we seek vanity and a grasping for the wind. Any comments you have?